everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, with the monsoon, the summer rainy season may begin a little early. When I see 50 or 60% chance of rain in the next couple of days, I think we could get some rain.
They're saying the chances for rain should last on into next week.
Yeah, which is basically kind of kicking off our summer thunderstorm season. And if that does happen, that will be a very early start. Normally it's the 4th of July or even a little bit later. Today is Wednesday, June 19th, 2024. It is a federal holiday. This is the Juneteenth holiday, which has been a federal holiday now since 2001. The Buckmaster Show is in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. They have the naming rights, and I'm glad they do. It's part of our growing presence of Bustos Media here in town. We're very proud of the fact that we have five radio stations under one roof right now. This is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. That means wherever you are in the world, you can log on to my website, buckmastershow.com, and you can live stream our program. And when you're at buckmastershow.com, we have conveniently archived all of our programs going all the way back to the first week of 2011 when we first began our radio project. All there, very convenient for you. I'm going to guess and say 95% of every show we've done now is up there and archived. When we do our telephone interviews, that service is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Well, let's bring back a fan favorite to our listeners. He's very popular among the Buckmaster Show listeners, and it's pretty obvious this man is incredible, Dr. Albrecht Claassen, renowned scholar of medieval history. And in my opinion, he's fits to the T the definition of a true Renaissance man. Professor Claassen is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He has just published his 130th scholarly book. It's a criticism of courts and evil kings in the Middle Ages, and we'll be talking a little bit about that. He has written hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry and four volumes of essays and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. See what I mean about a Renaissance man? I don't know when he ever sleeps. This guy is always busy. He has won many honors, including Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of Three Lions, in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. Dr. Claassen is editor-in-chief of the International Online Journal Humanities, which I believe is published in Geneva, Switzerland. Is that right?
Basel, yeah.
Basel, yeah. So he's got many honors, and one of the most important came in the fall of 2022. In fact, it was on this radio show that he first broke the news that he had been honored as a Fulbright Scholar. He had just gotten the news and then shared with our audience. And he spent a semester in Cairo, Egypt, as part of under that Fulbright Scholar program. Always a pleasure, Dr. Claassen.
Thank you so much, Bill. I'm happy to be here.
What's the secret to, how do you avoid jet lag? I mean, you're on and off planes doing so many overseas trips. Back a couple of trips to Germany since we saw you. It's been about 2.5 months.
Right.
Do you suffer from jet lag?
No, not really. No. I can sleep on the plane. Very pleasant. And I can do a lot of work. And then I'm just tired and sleep. And just that's fine. Yeah, that's okay. I don't suffer from it.
Well,
I'm lucky.
Yeah, you're very lucky.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about this. You know, it's very appropriate now. We've just recognized the 80th anniversary of the Allied landings in Normandy, and which really began the final advance on Nazi Germany. You were asked to do a real major translation of a diary of a German POW. Right. How did that come about? I've got the book in my hand, and by the way, it's they have beautifully put this together, the artwork on that.
So, very interesting. And actually, tonight at the Treffpunkt in Scottsdale, that is the Center for German Studies, the German Honorary Consul in Phoenix, we will do a book launch and at 6 p.m. So, if anyone wants to come, that's free and open to the public. I was asked by the grandson of this man, who had written during the last few years, 2 years of the war, and then later during his imprisonment, first in American prisoners of war camps and then in French, and then finally he returned. So first I thought, oh, it's just a translation. That's okay. But it really dawned upon me very soon because it hit home so close. Because they're very traumatic. I mean, a simple person, but writing really from his own personal perspectives, his human dimension. There are some political comments as well. He used to be a communist, but then he fought in the German Wehrmacht. And so he went through all this the suffering and until he finally was liberated and then sent home. So for me, it was a great honor and very insightful, really, to do this translation. I think it's so important finally to see something, to read something from the other side of the war. I don't want to promote necessarily just the German side, but it's just the human experience in a camp. And we know there are lots of prisoners of war camps all over the world. But here is a very first-hand experience, a little bit different perspective than we normally have on German culture, literature, history, and politics, and so forth.
What surprised you about the project? I know when you went into it, you really didn't know what you were getting into. This was a major undertaking.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I had to read, had to be able to read the handwriting. So it's not printed. So that was a little bit of a difficulty. It was handwritten down, completed in 1951 or something like that. And I could, it took me a little while, but then I could read the hand. So it was slow. I had no idea really. It was a slow way into it, and suddenly it hit me really between my eyes that, oh my goodness, this is a fantastic historical source that lots of people might really want to read about. The really hands-on and down-to-earth experience, all the dirt and the hunger and fear and all these very human experiences, human drama, but through the lens of a very simple person, actually. And he writes in a very sophisticated way for his age and his background.
How old was he at this time?
He was at that time about 18 to 20.
Had he been a conscript? You said at one point one point he was a communist, but then, hey, you better join up or else, right?
Well, I was really struck by this thing because it hit home once again. My father was only barely 17 in 44 when he was drafted. He had tried to escape from the Nazis. He was a student. And then finally he was drafted in the last few months of the war. And so he survived. But he told me actually somewhat similar stories when, you know, let's say 1945, the war is over. The Americans have to deal with maybe 2 million prisoners of war overnight. There's no water. There are no tents. There's no food. Very complex and difficult logistics. Eventually, it all worked out, and they're all much happier to be in American prisoner of war camps than the others, the Russian sides.
Of course, and they're just happy to be alive.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the name of the book. So some of our listeners, it will be available, I assume, on Amazon?
Absolutely.
Okay, the first name is Fritz, F-R-I-T-Z, which is very common German name.
Right.
Is that like, would be in English, Frank?
It comes from Frederick.
Frederick,
really.
Fritz.
But not hard anyone would say Frederick, no. So they would say Fritz.
Fritz. Yeah. And then the last name?
Is Haberler, so H-A- with the umlaut,
B-E-R.
E-R, Haber.
Haber.
It's Haber. Right?
Haber. Okay, and it's the complete diary, 16 months in an American POW camp. Really gives a different perspective. I think a lot of Americans would be interested to see, well, just what was it like for the Germans, they were going through.
Exactly. So, you know, a different voice, a different source, very, very important for our understanding.
Also, the new book, your 130th, on criticism of courts and evil kings in the Middle Ages. A lot of people may think, well, there's so many misconceptions. We've talked about it many times,
yes.
Professor, about the Middle Ages. Many people probably think, well, did they even have courts? What was their legal system like? We know they had kings, and presumably a bunch of them were evil. So, yeah.
Well,
I don't know about a bunch, but
right. But you know, every system, every political system needs an administration, needs structures, needs laws, and many times, of course, you have dynasties, and then they become victims of nepotism, and then they are in turn assigned strife, and so many times things went bad, just like in our system sometimes, that people become corrupt, for example.
Yes.
They abuse their power, they abuse the situations, or they draw money, or they are just violent in many different ways.
Could be modern-day parallels here.
Sounds like it. You know, this is really sort of what my general interest is as a medievalist.
Yeah.
I don't want to do just medieval research. I want always to show how much that time can speak to us.
Yes.
And it's simply a different lens that allows us to look at us, ourselves, but from the other side, in a way.
All right, we're going to pause right here. We'll have more with Professor Claussen. I want to talk a little bit about, he's just back from Germany, and they, the Germans have their own migration issues with immigrants. I want to hear his take on that as we continue on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of our program presented by our friends over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site. Everything you need for your summer gardening. And they're also on the same location, Zocalo Village, which has beautiful imported items, many things from Mexico, including beautiful Talavera pottery. So they have done, Jan and Jack, the owners, just have done a marvelous job with their business. And that business now is over a half century that they have been in business. Not the same owners, but they certainly, Jan and Jack, have done a great job over there. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. We continue now with our conversation with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, renowned scholar of medieval history at the University of Arizona, where he is a distinguished professor of German studies, talking a little bit about his 130th scholarly book that he has just had published. And we were talking a little bit earlier about the translation that he did from the diary of a German POW who is in captivity for about 16 months. So that's another project that Dr. Clausen has been involved with. Want to talk a little bit about, you're just back from one of your trips to Germany. How are they handling I know that there's been a rise of kind of the populist and right-wing parties in Germany. And is the migration or immigration kind of a very sensitive topic and kind of a third rail, if you will?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that, yes, I'm a medievalist, but at the same time, you know from my many different letters to the editor in our journal, our newspaper, I mean, that I'm very much dedicated to political awareness and I'm involved very much as I can. But immigration is a huge problem. You have for all of Europe. Really, it's not just Germany, but every country from England to Spain to Italy, Greece, Poland, Sweden, they all struggle in a major way because there are suddenly millions of new people and millions more would like to come because they know that they will face a welcoming culture, kind of welcoming, with social support. And so we have kind of a whole industry, cotton industry, of people who's in Africa or wherever, who sent their oldest son, you go, you make some money, and then we all come.
Similar to what happens with Mexico.
It was one big difference.
One person sending back money and comes to work. But you said
one big difference. Because let's say our immigrants here, they have to find jobs. No one is paying them money.
No.
But in Germany, for example, they all get money.
What?
They get schools. What? They get hospitals. They have all kinds of treatments. And there is, I could go into a thousand little things, but that's one of the major reasons.
So if they're accepted into the system and they've arrived in Germany, they suddenly are going to get all the goodies?
Yes, they're getting the goodies, and people are getting angry. You have all over Europe these right-wing parties. They emerge simply in the wake of all the immigrants. So people are angry all over Europe, whether you think about the proto-fascist government in Italy, whether you think of the AfD in Germany, that rises every month because people are angry. They see that they have to pay more and more taxes. They see that the whole system breaks down and suddenly they're all the immigrants. I mean, I don't blame them, but they get so much treatment that, of course, everyone wants to go to Germany. It's a welcoming country. The government welcomes, but not the people.
Are they have any say in the political? Are they allowed to vote?
No, not at all. No.
So like here. Is it open-ended? I mean, do they have a supposedly this is good for a year or then we'll...
Well, the most dramatic thing is that there are many crimes being committed.
Okay.
You hear this all the time. Very recently, a police officer was stabbed with a knife and died. You have rape. You have all kinds of burglaries and so forth with millions of, let's say, 1 million Ukrainians.
Yeah.
How many of them are criminals. I mean, I don't want to say anything negative about the Ukrainians, but amongst all peoples, you have criminals.
Of course.
So you have suddenly all these criminals who come in, too, along with all the immigrants. Yeah. So you have all kinds of difficult times, and yet they are asylum seekers. And it's virtually impossible to throw them out. So I just read a few days ago on Sunday a new statistics that about 25% of all immigrants don't have any papers, or they deliberately throw away their passports so that they cannot be sent back.
Oh, my goodness.
So you have all kinds of centers where they're housed, and they have schools, they get treatment, they get money. Right now they're thinking about not giving them money, but just sort of kind of a credit card, but people are against that as well. It's just completely crazy.
That's not sustainable.
That's not sustainable. I mean, absolutely.
How can Germany welcome the world?
I mean, exactly. I mean, look, 2016, 1 million Syrians. Now in 2022, 1 million plus and growing Ukrainians. Constantly, you have thousands and thousands of Turkish asylum seekers. Then all these Africans. I mean, we don't want to be any negative about these immigrants. I understand why they come, but no country can ultimately sustain that.
No, you just can't.
And also people are getting angry because they have to pay higher taxes, and the roads are not being fixed, just like in Tucson, but for different reasons, you know.
But this brings up some really the ghosts of the past in Germany, doesn't it? I mean, you're really angering a lot of people who feel that these are we'll call them the other.
Yeah.
The others are coming, and this is...
Well, this was not the case in 1933. In 1933 or 1932, you had the economic crisis, you had the heavy toll of the Versailles Treaty, Germany's bleeding all the time, left and right, and there were lots of little parties all fighting against each other, and suddenly there rises the leader, the Führer. So, in a way, that's very parallel to our situation, except,
So let me ask you, you're always looking for parallels back to your area of interest, to the Middle Ages.
Yes.
Was there any kind of parallel with what's going on in Germany?
Interestingly enough, no. I think in that regard, no, because the structure was not geared towards such an absolutist rule. I mean, let's say the German emperor had to be elected. He was not simply appointed. He had to be elected. So already you have different structure. The English king constantly faced the lords. So it was an ongoing negotiation. So you had a lot of criticism of evil kings. Sometimes some kings were even thrown out. I mean, they were impeached and dethroned if that happened.
What?
1400, the German emperor Wenceslas, and he was dethroned. But he said, I don't care. And so he stayed as an emperor, allegedly, while another person took over the role. So he had competing things, difficult things.
This issue of migration is really the issue of our time, isn't it? And you compound that with climate change and how people are not where they're coming from, they can't sustain a living in agriculture.
Yes.
This is going to continue to be a huge issue.
Right, because we don't do anything to stop this vicious cycle. Because why would people leave if their situation is so bad? We have eco-refugees, you know, because the climate is changing.
Yes.
They have no water left, for example.
No.
Or they face so much violence because of drug lords fighting in their country, Guatemala, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they flee. I would do that, too, to save my life, my family. So that's we don't address the symptoms. You know, or we just sort of use, the Band-aids, we build a wall and think that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't solve that issue.
So do they talk about solutions over there in Germany? What are the alternatives?
I know that the German government, like other governments, is trying to negotiate with various countries so that they can maybe arrange this flow of refugees. But many times, let's take Morocco. There are a lot of Moroccans and Tunisians in Germany. I'm sorry, but they have been guilty of a lot of crimes, particularly against women. There's a lot of rape going on. But the Moroccan government says, no, we don't want these people. Mm-hmm. They are sort of the outcasts, mm-hmm. in a way, and they're shipped to Germany and everything's then fine for them, but the government cannot send them back.
Did you say there's approximately the Ukrainians have been a million refugees?
Germany alone
has taken
about
in a million refugees.
Yes.
From Ukraine.
Just right after the war. And if Ukraine will face more problems, there will be several more million people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Of course, the German government has also a huge bureaucratic problem because they don't allow these people to be integrated fast. They don't get work permits. They don't get a status. So they're hanging in there for years and just getting money from the government and not allowed to do anything. So it's kind of a stalemate in the entire system. Not very good.
Well, eventually the Germans are going to run out of money if they keep throwing the money.
Well, what could happen is that the right-wing parties
yes,
will win.
Yes, take over and then...
And then it will say stop. And
stop.
They will just, yeah.
All right, Dr. Albrecht Clausen, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have you on our program.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And your book, if you actually just Google your name on Amazon, it will probably come up. Tell us again about the book about the German POW.
Yeah, the name is, or the title is Fritz, F-R-I-T-Z, Haber, H-A with umlaut, B-E-R, and his grandson, Bernd Haber, edited the book, whereas I was the translator. So that's very easy to find. If you just simply use my name, Albrecht Clausen, you will find that too on Amazon.
And over the U, what is the two dots?
It's called umlaut. So you could normally spell it A-E. That's a very unique German letter.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Always a pleasure. Hope you have a great summer. Thank you very much, Bill. All right. We'll be right back. It's Travel Talk coming up next with my friend Ryan Hansen.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Time for our insider travel talk on the program with our travel contributor, my friend Ryan Hansen. Ryan is president and chief operating officer of Bon Voyage Travel, Arizona's premier travel agency since 1976. The Bon Voyage travel experts are standing by to create your trip of a lifetime. There are three Southern Arizona Bon Voyage offices, River and Campbell, Green Valley, and Oro Valley. BVTravel.com, your first stop in making your travel dreams come true. Ryan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bill, and yourself?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. You know, when it comes to all this stuff around biometrics, it's increasingly popular. I'm a little confused about it, but I understand that there is this concern about biometrics from the government.
Yeah, you can see all sides of how technology starting to really take hold of the travel industry and what can be viewed by some as more efficient, faster, easier way to process people through for paperwork or for, in this case, we're talking the use of biometrics for security lines at airports, which are becoming widely used internationally, but not as much here domestically. And they're really looking at this at the congressional level to make sure that there is privacy issues that aren't being breached here, right? There's a lot of Americans that do not want to be, quote unquote, on the grid. They don't want to be tracked and all of their movements monitored. However, as technology is utilized and can help us from an efficiency standpoint, there's a big concern that if we do not adopt some of these biometrics, and we're talking about facial scans, retina scans, to use that instead of just looking at your boarding pass and a government-issued picture ID in the form of your card or your passport, but utilizing biometrics to expedite your way through security, some Americans feel like it's breaching privacy. Many Americans also feel like, hey, if that can help me get through security faster, that's something that we should look at. So it's a polarizing topic, Bill, for sure.
I've seen it. I think Delta's using it quite a bit, aren't they, Rhino?
Yeah, Delta has picked up here in the United States, not at all airports and not in every single area of the country, but in a few airports across the country, you do not need your ID. You don't need your boarding pass. You just step up to the security line, and there's a picture that's taken of you that matches up to, obviously, other pictures that you have on record, and it most likely is your passport photo, your driver's license photo, that they're matching up, and that is definitely helping expedite through travelers, which, as you and I have talked, more and more people are traveling through airports than ever before. This summer is going to be the biggest travel summer on record. And so if we can help make that more efficient, it really, in this day and age, is pretty difficult to stay off the grid like some Americans want. But it's very interesting. There's a lot more layers to it. And we'll let, I hate to say this, Bill, but you and I will let the congressional members fight this out and we'll trust their judgment. I don't know if that's the right statement, but it's for other people to vote on and to figure out. But I definitely feel like if I were someone, I'm all for efficiency to move me through. Efficiency without compromising safety, of course.
You know, when it comes to passport renewal, that's sort of an anxiety level for many people. They're thinking, oh my goodness, wow, when should I start thinking about it? When, if the passport expires within a year? Lots of concern among people, and it's an anxiety point.
It very much is, and there was a time period post-COVID because of the government agency layoffs and spinning things back up. It was a long process. There was an expectation for a passport renewal. You know, someone that's holding a passport doesn't let it expire and renew. It was still taking upwards of 12 weeks to get that back, and that's not horrible, but it is something that the government felt was not in the best interest of travelers. And so speaking of technology improvements, just like the biometrics to make things more efficient, the U.S. State Department, as of today, this is timely, is running a beta test for online renewals for passport holders. Now, you have to be eligible. You have to have a passport, hat cannot be your first one, so it is truly a renewal. You must be 25 years of age or older, and the most recent passport must have been issued within 2009 and 2015 and valid for 10 years at that time. So if you fall under those criteria, you can go online to passport.gov and you might fall into the beta test. And I say might because it's a small number of people that they're testing. And if it works properly, they're hopeful that this could take, instead of up to 12 weeks to get your passport renewed, it could cut that in half. They're trying to get closer to the 6 to 8 weeks, and that would be really good for our travelers.
How would that work with the photograph? Maybe they just use the one on file or what?
Yeah, or you can upload one. I'm not sure the exact process because the beta test, I have not seen the actual portal, and I'm not in need of renewing my passport, so we'll have to see what comes back. But that my hunch is you'll probably be uploading a digital photograph of yourself that fits the same parameters, just like you'd go to the post office and have them take that photo for you.
Okay. Well, one other area among many that folks have anxiety about is lost baggage. That traveler... Myself included, how we all worry about it.
We do, and it's interesting. Some data has come out here recently, and the numbers sound good, but when you're the one that has their bag delayed or lost, you don't care about statistics that globally last year, only 6.9 bags per 1,000 were mishandled. And when I say mishandled, that could be just delayed, that could be completely lost. But that doesn't sound too bad unless it's you. But what I thought was important to note in this statistical analysis was that's down almost 10% from 2022. So like it or not, maybe we all want to blame the airlines for not doing the right thing. They're getting better, 10% better at handling your bags and ensuring that they make it to the destination on time as you do. What they have found is found some other interesting data. When you put this number in it, the airlines in 2023 mishandled 36 million bags. So we talked about a small number per thousand, but when you think about the sheer volume of bags that the airline industry is responsible for, it's actually not terrible what they're doing unless it's you. Of course, that's the challenge that we all see. But the data is also showing that 82% of the mishandled bags were actually just delays. It was not completely lost or damaged or stolen. It was just a delay that was pretty much, as you and I both know, when you have that connecting flight, that is half the bags that are delayed don't make that connection point. So if you're looking to even reduce your lost or delayed bag potential, carry on. Do your best to know the TSA rules about carry-on. And then secondly, try to find nonstop flights, right? That will dramatically reduce the potential for a lost bag.
Yeah, and I'll throw something else in there. I've been noticing, especially with American, they are cutting down these connecting times. O'Hare, 35 minutes. Come on.
Dallas, Bill, you're so right.
Dallas, 40. Up in Phoenix, they can go down to, again, 30 minutes. When I see that, it just brings, especially if you are checking a bag, that's a red flag.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bill. On top of, if you cannot find that nonstop flight, if you just cannot get everything in your carry-on because of the size of the liquid containers or just the amount of clothing that you need to take for your trip, that opportunity for disaster on a short connection is not necessarily the baggage handler's fault, right? No. Getting from one concourse to another at O'Hare personally is a challenge. Can you imagine what happens on the back end for a 35-minute connection with a slew of bags? Historically, prior to the last year or so, a legal connection in the airline industry would be 45 minutes. But as you mentioned, it has been cut. So when you're booking your flights, and many people just go straight to an online source to book their flights, either directly to the airline site or use an aggregator to book flights, make note of those connection times because typically, and this is an unfortunate situation, the lowest fare seems to be tied to the shortest or the very, very longest connection.
I've noticed.
An ideal situation. Yeah. So what you may save in your upfront fare, you will pay if your bags are delayed or lost because of that. So make sure that you give yourself ample time, and especially in major hubs, like you mentioned, Dallas, Atlanta, Chicago, L.A., give yourself an hour, not only for your own transit from gate to gate, but also for your bags.
Yeah, real good point. Also, before we take the break, this is an election year, and I'm just curious, does that impact the business, the travel business, presidential election years?
As you can imagine, Bill, the advertising windows, the amount of noise that's going to be upon us that's already started, what does that do to all of us? It just distracts us. It puts our thought process on things other than vacations, which are so wonderful to think about, dream, and plan for, instead of thinking about the messy politics, regardless of your affiliation or what your beliefs are. There is a lot of concern every 4 years. However, there's some optimism this year. There's many travel advisors and industry experts that have been surveyed, and we're not seeing that dramatic slowdown in an election year at this stage of the calendar. Closing in on November, it might change, because you and I both know you won't be able to turn your TV on or your radio without hearing at least a couple of political ads, and kind of hard to throw in your River Cruise ad or your Alaska Cruise ad when you're hearing about all these political pontifications. So we will see and kind of anticipate a little bit of a slowdown. But if you're listening to Bill Buckmaster every day, you know you need that vacation to get you away from all this political nonsense. So give us a call.
Amen. Amen, brother. All right, let's take a break right here. One of my favorite topics is kind of places like, if you don't want to go to Hawaii, maybe the Azores, which is like Hawaii. I think you kind of call it duplicates. Let's talk a little bit about that, Ryan Hansen, after the break. What do you say?
Sounds great. Looking forward to it, Bill. I've got a number of options for people.
All right. I want to hear about them right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's Metropolitan Planning Organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We like to say Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico will be cooler, and that's pretty much our Buckmaster Show guarantee because of the elevation. 10 to 15 degrees cooler. Looking at those temperatures, looking really good. Mid-80s. Friday, actually mid-70s over in Silver City. Take the drive, only about a three-hour drive. It is worth it to get to the cooler climes and that elevation around a mile high. Think like Denver. So, southwestnewmexico.org, the starting point for your trip over to visit my friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We're talking travel. Travel talk with Ryan Hansen, our travel contributor. Ryan's the president and chief operating officer at Bon Voyage Travel. And Ryan, perhaps folks are thinking, you know, I'd sure like a taste of France, but for whatever reason, financially or the time-wise, I can't make it to Paris. There are some interesting alternatives.
There's definitely some alternatives, and you wisely chose a city in the world that no one wants to be in late July and August of this year because of the Olympics, right?
Yeah,
a place that's
right.
Going to be overrun with lots of people. But we're seeing that even beyond the Olympics, Bill, where lots of these very popular destinations are almost not as fun because there's so many people transiting there and wanting to visit some of these very popular destinations, Paris being one of them. I would recommend, and in the industry, you teased it as we went to break, duplicate destinations that have kind of a look-alike feel.
Yes.
It's not just maybe the architecture, but it could be the culture, the language, the cuisine. You really need to make your way to Montreal. We kind of refer to it as the Paris of the Americas, and it's that unique blend of European and North American vibes, the French influence with the language, also the architectural style. I mean, go look at the Notre Dame Basilica in Montreal and tell me you aren't 100% sure that that's not the Notre Dame in Paris.
Yeah.
And you trying to pick which one's which, it's tough to do, which means Montreal is going to have that same flair and same feeling as if you were reminiscing of the times in the City of Lights in Paris. I think that'd be a great option for people to avoid the bustle and hustle of Paris this summer.
You know, I've been over to the Azores Islands a couple of times out in the mid-Atlantic, and it feels so much like Hawaii. It's as green, every bit as green as Hawaii. And there is a difference, though. Temperatures in the Azores pretty much year-round, 70 to 80 degrees, and you don't get that high humidity of the Hawaiian Islands.
And you don't get the crowds, right?
No.
To go to Hawaii these days, you almost have to go to the remote islands of Kauai or some of the other island, you know, really remote islands.
Yeah.
To avoid the mass number of people that get to Hawaii because of its ease. It's in the States. But we do love the Azores as well for the climate, for the tropical feel, the lush greenery. That's definitely the Hawaii of the Atlantic. And so it's a great option for people if you're looking for that style of trip. But maybe you've been to Hawaii and you just want to see something different, but in that same relaxation, sun and fun style, without all of the crowds. You're going to have a theme here, Bill, with most of our destinations. It's either going to be less expensive. In most cases, it's going to be less expensive because it's not as popular, and the crowds will be definitely smaller in some of these places as our duplicate destination run continues.
And getting to the Azores is really easy. Their airline, their national airline, Azores Air, flies almost brand new Airbuses out of Boston's Logan Airport. It's about going west to east. I've made it in 4 hours and 20 minutes. So, and you're in Europe. That's the beginning of Europe right there. And not many ways you can say I'm getting to Europe in less than 5 hours.
Right. And speaking of Europe, Bill, you and I both know that the Greek Isles are a very popular destination for many people. And I would say the top two islands that most people want to go to is Santorini and Mykonos, right? That's what everybody, they want to see the blue domed buildings in Santorini. They want to have the taste the baklava in Mykonos, which I can say I've done. But you, if especially if you're on a cruise, you're going to be in port with probably more people than you care to be in port with. There's a number of different islands. Hydra comes to mind. Look for a smaller cruise ship. We would recommend a cruise line like Windstar or Sea Dream to see the Greek Isles in a much more calm and relaxing way versus some of those cruise ships that have 3,000 passengers descending on Santorini all in the same day. That's not as much fun.
You know, I've heard that Cartagena in Colombia is kind of a dupe for Barcelona.
Yeah, if you're looking for that Spanish flair, right, the same style of food, a little bit time zone-wise, though, much more conducive for a North American to travel to Cartagena where you don't have that big time zone change. The distance is not terrible. And the lifestyle in Cartagena is now where, what, Bill, 20 years ago, none of us would consider going to Colombia for safety reasons, right? We would all say, stay away. Boy, has that changed in the last two decades and really in the last handful of years. They are way more welcoming to visitors, especially from the United States. Cartagena has all of the cultural nightlife that you would find in Barcelona without all of the crowds of the Las Ramblas, where you have to worry about pickpockets sometimes as you're walking the streets, and especially of the Las Ramblas. Go to Cartagena, and I don't think you'll feel as overrun by tourists.
And you'll feel like you're in Amsterdam if you go to the island of Curaçao on the what is known as the ABC, Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao.
And I love that you bring that up. You are a connoisseur of the Caribbean islands.
Oh, yeah.
So you know very well that many of the islands do have a lot of tourists, like a St. Martin in the Dutch Caribbean Isles, where Curaçao can give you, again, that same feeling from architecture to cuisine to lifestyle that you would find because of that Dutch influence in Curaçao. But, again, not as pricey. And not as overrun from tourists. You can hit those beautiful gleaming beaches, crystal clear blue water, elite level scuba diving right there in Curaçao. Maybe not on the top five list for most Caribbean travelers because, like we said, St. Martin, St. Lucia, those get a lot of the headlines, the Bahamas, Bermuda. Think about Curaçao as an option if you're looking at the Caribbean.
And if you're going to Australia, Melbourne is kind of the dupe for New York City. It's the very metropolitan hub of Australia.
Just a bustling metropolis. I love Melbourne. Great scene there. And you and I have talked about this before. If you have not traveled internationally, and maybe you're a little bit nervous about a language barrier or a big, diverse food selection because you just aren't sure if you're going to like it or how am I going to make it, Australia, New Zealand, both of those destinations, and in particular Melbourne, would be a fantastic place to go. You're not going to be out in the bush. You don't need to go to the outback your first time down there, and use Melbourne as a launching pad for your international destination. You can assimilate into the culture of Australia and particularly Melbourne very easily as a North American.
All right, Rhino, before we let you go, is it still is there availability for Alaska?
There is availability for Alaska, but it is getting a smaller and smaller window. As you and I have talked before, just from a timing standpoint, you have really until the middle of September to be able to plan for a 2024 Alaskan cruise before everything starts to shut down. So if you want to go this year, you better get on it quickly.
All right. Check it all out at bvtravel.com. Ryan Hansen, always a pleasure. Talk to you in August. Thank you very much, Rhino.
Thanks, Bill. Safe travels.
All right. We're going to wrap it up there. The Buckmaster Show. Wishing everybody well on behalf of Ryan Hansen and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. Midweek edition, we'll be back with you tomorrow, Thursday, at 12:04. Have a great afternoon.